When Russ and I lived in Madison, Wisconsin, our apartment was in a densely populated, very urbanized neighborhood on busy University Avenue, across from a car wash and the Erickson gas station. Yet late every February and into March and April, I'd hear right from our yard the songs of eastern wood peewees and eastern meadowlarks, not only an inappropriate habitat for both species, but also much earlier in spring than either species ever returned. I figured out the very first spring that we lived there that these songs were not being given by either peewees or meadowlarks, even though the songs were spot on. They were produced by European starlings. Starlings here in America only since 1890 have been a regular part of the landscape in Europe throughout written history. Their scientific name, given to them by Linnaeus himself in 1758, is Sternus vulgaris. Sternus is simply the Latin name for starlings. Vulgaris means common, not in the sense of being vulgar, as cynical American birders would have it, but simply in the sense of being everyday birds found throughout much of Linnaeus's landscape. The same year that Linnaeus named the starling, he also gave the northern mockingbird its scientific name, Mimus polyglottis, which means mimic of many voices. One of my dear friends, David Gerlach, told me that he heard what he thought was a mockingbird, quote, one starry morning, a mockingbird with a rough whiskey and cigarettes coarseness to its voice. But David found out from an acquaintance that his bird was a starling. Like mockingbirds, starlings can make perfect imitations of other bird songs, natural sounds, and mechanical and human-generated sounds. I learned soon after becoming a birder that starlings were introduced here because of being mentioned by Shakespeare. I'd taken several Shakespeare courses in high school and college, but didn't see a reference to starlings in those. My new correspondent, Timothy Flannery, has a more classical education than I, being a retired Latin teacher from the Packer Collegiate Institute in New York. As such, he's actually read Henry IV, Part 1. Timothy sent me additional details about his Mortimer the Starling's imitations. Quote, unlike your Mortimer, our starling hadn't, yet anyway, begun to mimic any household appliances. That said, we had the feeling that Mortimer was just warming up to his vocalizations at the point we lost him. Besides his few articulated words, he would sometimes let forth a litany of chattering, a sort of ongoing monologue of gutturally muttered, not quite articulated words, but with human-sounding speech intonations, as though he were practicing innumerable phrases that would likely have emerged intelligible subsequently. He would typically hold forth from my shoulder during the nightly dishes, his usual hour for telling me every last detail about how his day had gone. While Timothy was dealing with the loss when his Mortimer died, his thoughts ran to poetry. He quoted the last two stanzas of William Cullen Bryant's 1818 poem, To a Waterfowl. Thou art gone. The abyss of heaven hath swallowed up thy form, yet on my heart deeply hath sunk the lesson thou hast given, and shall not soon depart. He who from zone to zone guides through the boundless sky thy certain flight, in the long way that I must tread alone, will lead my steps aright. That puts Timothy in the same category as Mozart, who cherished his own dear pet starling for 3 years. Mozart was especially charmed that his bird mimicked some of his own musical phrases. He even transcribed one example of the bird's song in musical notation. Mozart was distraught when that beloved bird died in 1787, but he couldn't be comforted by Bryant's poem. Bryant hadn't even been born yet. So Mozart wrote his own poem for his beloved bird's funeral. He wrote it in German, but here is the English translation. Here rests a bird called Starling, a foolish little darling. He was still in his prime when he ran out of time, and my sweet little friend came to a bitter end, creating a terrible smart deep in my heart. Gentle reader, shed a tear, for he was dear, sometimes a bit too jolly, and at times quite folly, but never more a bore. I bet he is now up on high, praising my friendship to the sky, which I render without tender. For when he took his sudden leave, which brought to me such grief, he was not thinking of the man who writes and rhymes as no one can. That was Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart writing about his own starling, and I'm Laura Erickson, speaking for the birds.